Okay, so yeah, so this is, for those of you here last time, this is part two of the 12-part talk.
We're going through to 12.
So, so yeah, following on, basically, so in the fine outum, which we've been studying, you also have a tissue which is an epithelium, it's a monolayer epithelium, and the apical surface you have adherence junctions, and several years ago in the lab, we looked at, in fact, the junction dynamics that enable cells in this crowded layer of tissue in the middle to leave. And so it's just an introduction. So, but basically, essentially, what we find is that some cells in crowded regions shrink and leave. And we, together with Tom Duke, sadly, we worked on sort of using a vertex model to understand how this worked. And the idea that we came up with Tom is that essentially, you know, if you are cells leaving, you're going to have shortening junctions, and shortening junctions when we go to zero, essentially, the cell gets kicked out and falls below. And so this got us interested anyway in how junctions change length in the motor, which is what we're going to tell you about today. And of course, as you heard, neighbor exchange events, which occur when you shrink junctions in tissues like this, in epithelium, are very important in morphogenesis in lots of systems. And this is the movie that Scott and Milan took of germ band elongation in Aristotle embryos. And you can see that it's even hard to see, but basically you have lots of neighbor exchange driving this elongation of tissues. Just like in Xenophis. So there's a long sort of history of studying this, and we wondered whether the stuff we see here is similar or different to what's been reported before. So this is the work of Charlotte and Scott. So Charlotte's a theorist, physicist, who's just finished a PhD, and Scott is a PhD student who's also finished. So if you all have lots of suggestions for experiments, I'll have to do that. So but essentially, they did a very nice piece of work looking at neighbor exchange in the simple epithelium, which is the flying notum, which is much simpler than many other systems we can study. So it's a bit of an introduction. So essentially, in many tissues, you have a system like in the previous movie I showed you, where during germ band elongation, you accrete actomyosin to a junction, you get often decrease in the cohering, or maybe always, the junction shrinks, and then you elongate the other vertex in the opposite direction to lead to the loss of some oriented junctions and the elongation of other ones to change the shape of the tissue. And so some of the features of these systems are that you tend to have junctions that are lost and then a separate process of reformation. The mechanisms that have been proposed are thought to be different. So you have actomyosin contracting junctions, and elongation, you lack actomyosin, it's a different kind of process. They're driven by this polar myosin that you saw briefly in the movies, where it's on some junctions you have myosin, other ones you don't, and these are the ones that shrink. And because your whole tissue is polarized, you get morphogenesis of the whole tissue because lots of junctions are doing the same thing at similar times. And in the end, what you get is you get a tissue which is changed in shape, but in fact, it started off, maybe you can see that in the movie, it started off quite ordered, and as the movie plays, it gets very disordered because you're driving the loss of some junctions, you get plenty of images of this.
Sorry, what's your definition of disordered for the tissue?
So basically, it starts hexagonal packed and it ends up with lots of funny shaped cells, maybe even square packing or other kinds of packing. So I'm saying hexagonal packing. So we're looking at the notum, which is, as I said, tissue where we also have cohering, we have myosin too, it's actually at junctions. You get fluctuations in junction length and you get neighbor exchange. It's not as common as you see in the regions of the tissue which we're looking at for this study, which are outside of the midline where there's no delamination. You get some neighbor exchange, but not that much. But it's a nice system where we can see whether the same kind of processes that people have studied before hold in the tissue. So we're going to go through some of these things that are thought to be true in the embryo, and we'll see whether they hold. So the first thing is that actually in the embryo, neighbor exchange is irreversible because it's driven by polarized myosin that comes, constricts the junction, and the other one's elongated. That's not true in the notum, where we have T1 transitions. They're often reversed, so this one is lost, and then it comes back. D1 did it do its work, you might ask someone to go all the way from the back. And we also get ones that are multi-directional, they'll go through and back and through and back. And because we're studying a delimited window of time for these high-resolution analyses between 12 to 13 and a half hours in development, where there's no subdivision, there's no delamination, all there is neighbor exchange. We, in order to study the probability of going through and reversing things, what we did is a Kaplan-Meier curve analysis where you look at how many survive, how many neighbor exchanges survive. And what we see is over time, is in minutes, you have T1s and they often reverse. So after like 100 minutes, about 70% have already gone back, maybe one or multiple times. And you can see that here, this is the distribution of junctions that did one neighbor exchange, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You can see that it's a very reversible process. So that in itself is very different to what's been described for wild type embryos. The other thing we see is that neighbor exchange during this period of imaging, from 12 to 13 hours, these are four different flies, it's completely linear over time. So it's happening all the time. It's not happening as a burst or a wave. It's just all the junctions have a probability, it seems, of going through, which is quite fixed over time. So you have, this is just a cumulative count of neighbor exchanges per time, so it's quite cumulative. So it looks, in a way, quite a much more random kind of process. So one thing that's really important about this tissue is, unlike in the early embryo, there's no morphogenesis. So this tissue in shape and size, all these T1s are labeled here, yellow, but the area of the tissue remains unaffected by neighbor exchange. The aspect ratio of the tissue, the length of this width is unaffected. And you can see these are neighbor exchanges marked on here, and the whole tissue stays the same. And the length of individual junctions, there's no bias in the orientation of lengths. So you're not losing preferentially particular junctions with a particular orientation. Essentially, what you have is a distribution of quite random, reversible neighbor exchanges. So I'm going to show you in my talk a lot of these very boring.
Could you measure the probability of neighbor exchange related to the length of the junction?
You'll see something later. So in fact, I'll show you something later. The shorter ones go through with a probability that's higher, because what we think, in fact, is you have a fluctuation in junction length. If you fluctuate through zero, you do a neighbor exchange. And so essentially, it's actually exactly, it's sort of, but it depends on how long you the process lasts, but essentially you have a probability of going through which does depend.
Is there anything else going on? There's no division here, right?
We chose especially this period because there's no division, no delamination, nothing really much happens. So, and well, the differentiation, which I talked about before, is sort of happening, but the cell states are not really changing. Later on, in fact, the cells that become bristles change their size, but that's not happening.
Volume, like pull up and down through the cells?
Yeah.
Looking at how they behave?
Well, one thing which I've got at the end, just to tell you now that some neighbor exchanges start basal and go apical, some start apical and go basal. They often can go opposite.
Are these like short transitions? Are they a complete exchange all the way along the apical?
Some of them are, and some of them are not. Okay. Actually, yeah. In fact, it might even be, but this is, it's the end of it, but it might even be that if you have epithelial cells with different tilts, you could, maybe neighbor exchange also might be driven by, straightening. But we that's something we'd like to look at. But it looks better. So also, what about the cells? So that's tissue. There's no tissue deformation. What about mass redistribution at the cell level? And actually, what we can do is we can measure individual neighbor exchange events. One here. We can look at, so just like in other tissues, you have a 90-degree switch in the junction orientation shown here. So you tend to switch by 90 degrees in neighbor exchange. What we did is we measured the orientation of this fit ellipse on these four cells as you go through a neighbor exchange. And you can see that it doesn't change. So in fact, although you're exchanging material in the middle, the edge of the four cells doesn't move at all. It's very similar. And so you see that here. And the aspect ratio is another measure, stays the same. So they're not reorienting. There's no redistribution of aspect ratio. They're just doing neighbor exchanges. That in a way explains why the whole tissue is not deforming, because each event is actually not even deforming the cells around it. It's just a fluid, a sort of fluid. What about symmetry? So I told you in general elongation adaptation, often thought that you constrict a junction with myosin and you elongate in a separate process. In the NOTAM, when we measured contraction rate and expansion rate, for T1 transitions, there's no difference. And that's also true for the general, all the fluctuations of all the junctions is symmetrical. So when you contract and expand, there's no difference. These are all very boring results. And also interestingly, if you measure the total length of the junction, so one idea from previous work is that when you have mate exchange, you remove material from one junction by, say, endostasis, and then you add material to the new junction. Of course, it's a connected system, so you can get different effects. But if in this very simple model, you can, if you remove material, add material, the total length of these five junctions will go down, and then it will go up again when you re-expand. What we see, in fact, is that essentially as you go through, this junction shrinks in length to zero, goes, and the new junction goes up, it's symmetrical. The length of the other junctions compensates by it goes, these ones, the green ones, go up and go down, and the total length is the loop effect. So there's no loss of material, no gain of material, all you're doing is exchanging. Very boring result.
Yeah. But during this time, are the cells displacing relative to each other, or are they pretty much stuck in
place? They're pretty much stuck in place. So the center of masses of cells is not changing too much in this period. I mean, it's quite a short, it's a 90-minute period, but it's not too much.
Did you compute something like a mean square displacement?
Yeah.
Also flat?
Mean square displacement, junction length?
No, I meant of the cell centers.
Over cell centers, the diffusive, we haven't done that actually, or vertices, I don't think we've done that actually. As Matteo asked, what we saw is that when you measure individual junction lengths, they fluctuate all the time. And so what we did is we smoothed them in lots of different smoothing regimes, and that enabled us to calculate the lengths over which you get a persistent shrinkage or expansion, and if you plot all these shrinkage and expansion events, you get a sort of distribution of persistent lengths which changes as you smooth. But this enabled us, importantly, to compare junctions that go through a T1 event, which are these ones, where it's far less, it's only 78 transitions. We could look at the persistent length distributions for those versus the entire population, where of course they're fluctuating, but they're not fluctuating through zero, because they're bigger. So this is a big junction that fluctuates. So basically these don't fluctuate through zero, and you get a persistent length population distribution, and these are indistinguishable when we do statistical tests, and that's independent of the smoothing we do. So it really looks like the junctions are just fluctuating through zero in a quite boring way.
So what is the, what's your persistence length?
So that's the length. We've also measured actually persistence rates.
The amount of change.
Yes. It's from here down to here. But we also did, in fact, the same for persistent rates, and it looks the same. So we can't distinguish between the two. But of course, the numbers here are much lower than the numbers here. So what about myosin? So, in other systems, actomyosin plays a key role. And in fact, in this system, if you can remove cadherin from the tissue completely, which is quite nice, because it's quite a stable epithelium, because it's already formed quite a while ago. And so if you remove cadherin or beta-catenin, what you find, in fact, is that myosin falls, I don't know if you see that, it completely falls off the junction, and you get this. So in this system, it looks like one of the major roles of cadherin and beta-catenin is to enable actomyosin forces to act on the junction. So we do think that this myosin that's on the junction is physically coupled to the junction itself, because when you remove the junction through loss of cadherin or in this case beta-catenin, it falls off. So in some way, cadherin
is sitting below.
Yes, exactly. I think it's
what's the time scale of this? Is it not drifting away or anything?
When we do the RNAi, we can see actually the distribution of. So when you do the RNAi with Pinir, you do get a gradient. And in the middle, this is the middle of the gradient where it's sort of fallen off. But you do get areas as you go away where it's sort of a little bit tethered, the network, and it sort of falls off.
Or is it just sitting perpendicular or something?
I think what's happening is it sort of, maybe it's tethered a little bit, because maybe it's not complete now, and then because there's contractile force, it's pulling itself off.
Okay.
And you'll see actually, it looks a bit like that later. So it looks like cadherin in the system is coupled to actinomycin because could actinomycin affect the negative exchange,
So going back to Smart Slide.
Yes.
So do you think there is less oscillation when the junction wants to go into the four-way vertex and then it starts to oscillate more when it expands again?
So there's that's why we did this. So what we did is, this is one case where it's quite clear it goes, there's a length at which we say it's gone to zero because there's a resolution problem. But essentially, when you measure these segments, they look identical to these segments. That's the distribution. So we can't see, so we wondered whether when you're going through a T1, do you change your way you move, but it doesn't seem that's the case. So we couldn't find any evidence for something special about the rate at which you go in or come out of a T1 that's different to shortening and elongating if you're just fluctuating. Something I can say later is about this point here, that might be special.
Because it seems there you have less fluctuation, right, when it starts to get into the four-way vertex.
Yeah. Well, in fact, that's why we did this analysis, but statistically we couldn't detect that. Yeah. It's possible there's something, again, the numbers are not that high, so maybe there's something missing. So myosin is probably, so does actin do anything? So if you image actin and myosin across the tissue, and bazooka is part 3, is something we use as a control to look at staining, and what we find is that actually in the early embryo there's a relationship. The way you have high myosin, you often have a low bazooka low cadherin. That's not true in pentum. It's flat, it's boring. There is actually bazooka low is much more uniform than myosin. So myosin, which we'll talk about a bit, is much more different at different junctions. But if you look at the angle of junctions relative to the embryonic, the pupal axis, again, there's no bias. Global bias in myosin distribution is just on some junctions and not on others. And if you look at the length of junctions, the short ones do have slightly more myosin than the long ones. There's a slight tilt here. And that is not surprising in a way because that would be what you expect if myosin would pull on a junction to make it slightly smaller at any point. So to test if that's really true, that myosin is doing what we think it does, we did we imaged junction, we image bazooka intensity, and we image length, and we looked at myosin intensity. And what you can see is that as the myosin intensity goes up, junctions tend to shorten, and myosin intensity goes down, they tend to elongate. And that enables us to generate cross-correlation analysis where you see which precedes, that if you recruit myosin, does that precede a shortening event? And what we did, very simply, by just looking at myosin intensity versus junction length, what you can see is that about 35 seconds before the shortening, you tend to recruit myosin. So myosin intensity goes up, is high, when junction shortens, suggesting that, just like it says on the can, myosin shortens junctions. It's just in this tissue, it seems to be a bit unbiased.
But for the statement that myosin correlates with length is a different statement.
Yes, it's true, because this is a static,
Precisely, and the signal here is much stronger than the signal there.
The one here?
Yeah.
Yes. No. Yeah. I mean, in fact...
Be sort of a very naive picture of...
Yes, it's true.
Spring, which is most certainly not true.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I should point out, in fact, maybe... It's true. This just gets again. One thing is important to state is that if you look at cadherin or bazooka, they're completely flat. So at least, I think this doesn't mean much. And as I said, actually, you'll see the problem that myosin does tend to be, there is a population of myosin inverses which causes a problem in this analysis, actually. Yeah. And for this analysis, what we do is we have to clip off the four inverses. Otherwise, you get the distortion. So we wanted to model it. I asked Jasper this Jasper picture. He's a theorist, so I guess pixelated is fine, but he eventually got to send me a picture. So this is Jasper, who worked with Guillaume Sambura to help us model structural fluctuations in the system. And so what we want to do with Guillaume and Jasper is sort of to see whether we can use these fluctuations of junction lengths to make it a sort of fluctuating vertex model, where the a classic vertex model with a damping term. So this gives you a time scale, as I mean correctly mathematically. But basically, this is gives you a time scale when about how when a force is applied, how it will lead to a movement. And importantly for the model, what they wanted to do is to actually have, instead of just jumping vertices around with a temperature term, which is what we did with Tom Duke, what we want to do is see whether myosin itself, which we know is on junctions, in the Chilton junctions, could myosin, differences in the junctional myosin at different junctions, could they be responsible for the for all the fluctuations we see? And so to do this is we measured the variation in myosin intensities between junctions in the tissue over time. And that's because what we noticed is that junctions tend to have a characteristic myosin level, which they fluctuate around, and that persists throughout the 90 minutes. So junctions have different levels of myosin, and they fluctuate around that, and we call the fluctuations around this intrinsic variation, and the extrinsic variation is the variation between junctions. And this gives a total variation, which in the model is used to drive movements of the vertices. So we have a sort of vertex model where we're using the fluctuation analysis to try to parameterize it so it fits the tissue. So when we so this is the model. It's we have, as I said, an effective time scale to do with this viscosity, and we can see nave exchange events. And we've done a lot of parameterization. I can show someone the supplement if you want to. And one of the things we've used is the fluctuations in perimeter, and we've also used the minimum point at which this correlation between myosin recruitment and shortening occurs to parameterize as well. Yeah.
So is gamma I J0 is fixed in the model? Fixed is pretty for junction IJ, is gamma IJ0 is fixed.
So what we found, so when we looked over time, we found that during the 90-minute periods, the individual junctions fluctuate with a very different, around a very different mean. So this relates to the mean, yeah. But of course, there will be some relaxation time where of that kind of distribution. But we didn't measure that during this period.
No, I didn't get that. So gamma zero is the same for every edge, or?
So there's a distribution of mean myosin levels for different edges in the tissue, and that's what we saw. So we saw that some edges just tend over the 90-minute period to have less than others in the tissue. So that was why we had this extrinsic.
Okay, so you choose from that distribution, and then that's fixed for the situation.
Yeah. And that's from the data, so it's really just putting that data numbers into the to see whether that kind of variations in myosin can give you any sort of effects.
Just trying to understand the origin of your basic thesis. This is an active model, so it's a driven persistent one.
Yeah.
So is the only source of actual driving the noise term in your gamma equation?
So the gamma equation contains, the driving force is, there's a white noise, there's some white noise in addition, mm-hmm. But most of the driving force is driven by these variations in the network of fluctuations in myosin levels and differences between junctions in the mean level.
So it comes from that noise term.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you know if there's more myosin 2 in the shorter junction, just because there are more myosin 2 in the vertices?
Yeah. So we remove the vertices to do that. But it's quite for very small ones you can't do it. And in fact, we do think. At the end, we do think there's a role for myosin at the very short one, which is separate to what I'm talking about, actually, which is. So basically, in the model, when you parameterize it, you get, what we do is we start off with different packings, and it collapses to a steady state of nave exchange events. And the nave exchange events, so this is cumulative nave exchange count, and you see that over time, we go to a regime where cells change neighbors occasionally, and it's reversible, and it's very much like we see in the tissue. It's a steady state. So one thing we could then do in the system is ask, what about the level of mass in two in the system? So mean tension is, the parameterized thing is at 1, so gamma is at 1. And what we see in the model, which is sort of, yes?
What do you do when the junction is small enough, you just...
Yes, we just flip, yeah, there's a minimum size which is related, which we mapped to the pixel size of our microscope, and that's when we emphasize the function, yeah. And actually it's very important for deciding your rate of neighbor exchange, because we also map, the rate of neighbor exchange is also fitted to the, so that's another parameter related to parameters that we fitted to the data. So then what we can do is we can use the model to ask a simple question, is that if you decrease mass and increase mass in, what happens to the neighbor, the neighbor exchange event? So what we see in the model is that if you decrease mass and you increase neighbor exchange, because and it relates to the level of mass in versus the noise. So because the as mass increases, the noise doesn't go up proportionally. When you decrease mass in, there's effectively more noise and actually fluctuates, you get more neighbor exchange. And when you increase mass in, proportionally to the noise, the mass in is going, the signal to noise is going down, and actually then you reduce neighbor exchange. So it's completely opposite of what you get in other systems where mass in is driving neighbor exchange. And in addition, the fluctuations in junction length go down with increasing mass in. So the model suggests, and you'll see we have data to suggest that the case, which is what we were. So we knew that already. But essentially, what we found is that the model can explain why the more margin you have, the less neighbor change you have, and the less fluctuations you have. And what you get as well is that as you increase margin from 0.8 to 1 to 1.2 tension, what you see is that the packing gets more hexagonal, which we call ordered packing, as you increase tension. So is that the case? So the nice thing is that in the tissue, I showed you only about between 12 and 30 hours, but there's also a period, so all the cells divide in the tissue, you get this whole packing process, which is very boring, so we won't talk about that, about how you pack some P1s and non-P1s, and epithelia, but at the end of that process, again, you have a tissue, which is at 20 hours, there's no cell division anymore, no delamination, it's stable again. But what you find is over subsequent hours, if the tissue is getting, the animal is getting ready to hatch, the marsin levels go up and up and up. And so you start off with a tissue that's very much like 12 hours, where marsin is different on different junctions, and you get huge amounts of marsin that start to go to the junctions at later periods. And when we do laser cuts, what we find is over development time, the tension on the junctions is really going up. So based on the model suggests that in this system, where you have fluctuations in mass and driving neighbor exchange, the more mass you have, the less neighbor exchange you have, and the more ordered you are. And what we find is that it's not very marked, but essentially these are four different flies, and measuring cumulative neighbor exchange count. And what you can see is that all plateau a little bit. So as mass goes up, the neighbor exchange rate goes relatively down. And this is all the data together. That this is the average, and you see that there's massive fluctuations. Also, there's this big hump, which is kind of a problem. But essentially, what we see is as tension goes up, neighbor exchange tends to go down, but there's this confounding factor. And this, I don't have the data in my talk, but essentially, there's a problem here because all the Bristol cells start to grow, and as they grow around them, you get neighbor exchange, and we haven't removed them from this analysis yet. So essentially that, we think, comes on at 25 hours, so it's responsible for this peak. But we think in the tissue, anyway, that as the tension goes up, the neighbor exchange does a little bit go down. Yes.
So, I mean, it seems from these cells, there's other cells, that there are different pools of optimizers. There's like a junctional pool and a medial pool, and I think that it's been shown that this medial pool is very, very dynamic. And yeah. Generates pulses, and probably it generates fluctuations.
Yes.
So I was wondering, don't you think that during time, maybe there's also a medial pool, which is reduced effect, and which could drive the fluctuation?
Yeah, we also did look at area fluctuations. It was, we don't see large area fluctuations, we do see some. And you are right that the medial pool, there could be a separate regulated media pool. And actually, you definitely see that as this junctional sort of peripheral mass increases, the junctional pool goes down. So we don't know whether there's a quantitatively quantitative increase in total mass, but the mass at the peripheral to the junction goes up, and the tension goes up. But yeah, it might be a redistribution.
That if you want to get the cells into more hexagonal array, the issue is not so much the absolute magnitude of the horizon,
right,
but the variability,
yes,
from edge to edge. So the question is the absolute abundance increasing? What's happening to the variance? Hopefully,
yeah,
it's shrinking when properly.
Yeah. So it was, again, we actually had a really hard time quantifying that, but we think that the variance between edges goes down as the length of time proceeds. One way that might be is because when the tension goes up, the effective cells pull on each other more and they feel each other more, and you get a sort of increase in the length scale at which tension is felt. And I think that homogenizes. So I think there's this regime where there's low massing, you're very non-homogeneous massing. When it goes up, you have this, I don't know if there's any theory, if there's a theoretical analysis of that kind of behavior, but we sort of see that it becomes more homogeneous.
Yeah. So do you see it?
We see that.
You have a difficulty quantifying.
It's just hard to quantify. Yeah. So it's actually quite the eye. It certainly seems to be the case, but it's because we have to decide what to do with the medial pool, and we have to decide what to do with vertices. So it's a bit tricky to get an absolute number on that.
So could you try to pick up a length scale in the correlation between the tensions?
Yeah, we did that early, and in this stage we got it, and it's only the nearest neighbor. There's no propagation of force. So that what it's a good idea. But what we should do is maybe we should measure. We definitely get some regional fluctuations, which here we don't see that. And that's so when you have a cell that shrinks, say an area, or a junction shrinks, it doesn't propagate that tension far at this stage.
Because I think one possibility is you can have a variance that goes to zero, yet there's no diverging length scale.
Right.
You can just have everything uniformly sort of become, variation dies down without any spatial correlation.
Yeah, no, I think that's, we should look at that actually.
Do you think that the size of the cell will influence the fluctuation, because it seems that over time the cells are becoming a bit smaller in the previous slide?
So as I said, from 12 hours to 20, all the cells divide once, and then they don't divide again. So what we've done for this analysis, that's an important question. If you take cell the tissue and you divide it up into half, double the number of cells, then you have a scaling problem, because the apical area and the size have changed in a different way. And we haven't looked at that. I think it's a really interesting question. But essentially, that's why we've done an analysis about ordering by just looking from 20 to 30 as massing is going up without any division or delamination. So cell area is not changing during that period, and there's no growth actually.
Could we go back to the previous slide? Just trying to understand why the interfaces right at the bottom slide. Are you looking at a different layer?
So I think that somehow it does look like each junction has its sort of own pool in this cell. So the if you compare two neighboring junctions, they're very different levels of massing, which seem quite uncorrelated. In this case, it seems that you have almost like we have a perimeter term. It looks like that this is actually that there's a uniformity across neighboring junctions. Somehow you've got coupling between actomycin cell skeleton between neighboring junctions in the same cell. That's why
I'm still puzzled just by imaging. So
if you look at this cell here. This is kind of physical adhering.
Bazooka is much more tightly localized than the interface than myosin.
Bazooka is right on the junction, and myosin actually is coming off.
So
and you get these circles in the middle, a bit like you see when we remove junctions completely, as if there's interconnectivity across the entire perimeter of the cell, which is again decreasing the variance between them.
And now this is a slice, or
these are all a single. It's all the junctions in a single plane.
And
it's a single section.
If you do a z-stack, what happens to?
No, it's actually in the same plane. It's not changing in z much. I mean, it's quite stable. It's not like
I'm just asking what happens when you just dissect the cell. So are they getting narrower? I mean, these interfaces getting narrower towards the apical surface, or getting wider, or are we just seeing the nucleus and everything?
This is really a single plane just in the junction. So it's a single plane. It's a linear.
So therefore, if I were to go 2 microns up and 2 microns down, it will
stay narrow. You will see nothing.
See nothing.
So we also measured other parameters looking at that look at order, and we saw that the tissue becomes slightly more hexagonally packed over time, so the frequency of hexagons goes up during this period when myosin is going up, and the variation junction length, so the fluctuations the differences between junctions across the tissue, the variance goes down over time, but also, which is not plotted here, if you take a single cell and you measure the differences in a single cell's length or its junctions, that also variance goes down. So in a way, the tissue is becoming a more ordered, hexagonally packed tissue over time as myosin goes up, and that is, we think, because it has to hatch and fly, as I explained the first time, because you need this sort of ordered state. So finally, just to the final experiment, we just did this just to see whether if you change myosin levels by experiments, and now we do it in the early case, we can do lots of measurements, can you recapitulate some of these behaviors? So we can change ROCK levels to change myosin activity. This ROCK is the kinase that makes mini filaments that drive tension. And so ROCK is where myosin is. It's at junctions and also the vertices. If you decrease ROCK, you get a reduction in tension as measured by vertex displacement. And if you increase ROCK, you get an increase. So again, myosin really does control tension at junctions. And what you find is that if you look at neighbor exchange rates, just like in the model, if you decrease tension, neighbor exchange rates go up. And if you increase tension, and this actually increase is quite similar to the increase in tension we see. This is quite similar to what we see during development, but it's all at 12 hours. It's just controlled 12 hours, ROCK, COT, 12 hours. You get also a corresponding decrease in neighbor exchange. And also when you increase ROCK tension, you get a decrease in the reversibility. This is again the Kaplan-Meier curve about how reversible are neighbor exchange events. Myosin locks it in place so you can't reverse, whereas if you have low myosin, you get the tissues much more fluid and you get more neighbor exchange. So essentially that's the idea. The idea is that in some tissues where you have polarized actomyosin across the whole tissue, you get loss of specific junction expansion, otherwise you can get morphogenesis. In this case, you have a tissue where there's variation between myosin in the tissue, between the and over time you increase myosin, and what happens is that you move to a more ordered state, and the neighbor exchange are not doing anything to do with morphogenesis, they're just sort of improving packing. And if you increase myosin prematurely, you may sort of lock it in place because you, again, stop neighbor exchange, which might be important to help you order the tissue. And there's another idea in the field, which is that you have a sort of fluid state with maybe low myosin tension, and if you increase myosin tension, you might be going to a sort of more elastic solid state with developmental time. And so we also think that, in a way, the tissue looks early on a bit like a fluid, and later on nothing much happens. And Max was telling me that he has proposed that if you measure the ratio of the perimeter to the square root of areas of cells, you get a number out, it's called P0, which is a signature of this boundary between fluid and elastic behavior of tissues. And so just yesterday, I look in our tissue, and in fact, it does look like in these stages, early stages, this perimeter, the square area term, looks like it's on the fluid side of this boundary between fluid and elastic, and afterwards, this is actually 22 hours when it's starting to increase mass in. It's not the end, and we have to measure that. It's now flipping the other side towards the more elastic. So we think the tissue is also becoming more ordered, more elastic, ready for the animal to hatch. So I suppose that that's it. Basically, essentially, we think that in this tissue, cadherin couples myosin to the cell cell interface, just like it does in other systems. Cadherin, myosin generates tension, just like in other systems. But the thing is that if you have quite isotropic myosin, so there's no polarity, the myosin tends to oppose name exchange because you get tension across the tissue. And the more myosin you have, the more you oppose name exchange. Whereas if you have polar myosin, you get morphogenesis. And so for us, one of the things nice about this is it shows that the key thing about planar cell polarity is that it gives you the maximum possible difference between two junctions. So the same cell will have one junction which is polarized in the right direction, it accumulates myosin, and the other one will have low myosin. And that gives you maximum variance. And as we saw, high levels of variance will give you, especially if it's polarized, will give you lots of change, and low levels of variance will give you no change. So I think the coupling of PCP to myosin makes sense because it's a way to maximize the variation between neighboring junctions and their level of myosin in an organized way. And we think the variation of myosin levels is really important because that gives you sort of stochastic behavior that enables you to change neighbors and maybe order a tissue. And so that's why, with development's time, you sort of have this process where the tissue anneals to this kind of stable state. And finally, just before the end, just to say, I want to just reiterate that we do think myosin might have another role, because there is lots of myosin at four-way vertices and rock. And it could be that there's a separate role for myosin, which we're also looking at, which is that myosin is actually physically blocking the going through a neighbor exchange. Because what I didn't say is we often see attempted T1s that go back. So there might be also a barrier function, kind of high energy term to go through a neighbor exchange, which myosin helps. So we want to remove myosin and get much more neighbor exchange, partly because we might have lost that barrier function. And the other thing is that, like I said, it's all very random, cells are changing neighbors. And we even see lots of cells where you get a basal T1 can occur. In this case, the basal part of the cell is doing T1, and apically nothing's happening, and you get other ones where you get them doing opposite things. So I think we need to also look at 3D, which is something we haven't done yet, but for the future. And just to thank the people, so Eliana got us started on this work by showing how you have delamination, and that we did with Ada and Tom Duke, who were very sad to have lost. And Scott and Charlotte took it further and looked at this this very boring process of neighbor exchange and nothing happening, which is this 5-year PhD project for two people. Anyway, and we've recently got a lot of help from Guillaume and Jasper developing the model to really show how increasing myosin and myosin variance decreasing can affect.
So I think I've jumped ahead. The other questions are going to be the same about the myosin and the apical basal axis.
Yeah.
So in response to Boris's question, you said the myosin is at the top.
Yeah.
But then you're saying neighbor exchange is at the bottom.
Good question. In fact, I do think that there are other contributing factors to the fluctuation. So one other thing is called vesicle trafficking. When we remove vesicle trafficking, you do slightly reduce with Shibiri. There's this 10% of mutant in flies. If you reduce, so there's very little endostasis, exostasis, you do slightly reduce neighbor exchange, but not very much. So we think that's a contributing factor, though, and that will also maybe happen basally. We do see basal myosin, actually, but it's right at the bottom. That's right at the bottom, not on the lateral side. But we previously shown, in fact, that cells have these flaps in the middle, which are RAP, actin-based protrusions, where they will stick between, if you have a cell in the tissue, it will stick a a bit like a sharp thing through between two other cells and will adhere. So it could also be there's adhesive forces that enable cells to sort of move around the center of mass. And I think we should maybe look at the mean square displacement at the center of masses to see how much the whole cell is moving, actually.
Yeah. This is just an slightly unrelated. Have you looked at if there's any signal that is required for ratching? I mean, I'm wondering how do you time such transition so accurately?
Right.
And because that will also... I was just wondering what is changing in the cells.
Right.
How do they know that now they need to make this very precise hexagonal pattern?
Yeah.
And they didn't have before. Yeah. And
so one thing we should do, and we saw this project too, which I was talking about before, patterning is that... We probably need to know like how events are coupled in time, and so one thing is it Gaussian pulses, which will train things. But maybe also we haven't done the same analysis with a mutant where there's no cell division. But it might be interesting to see whether you could get the same event without any, you can uncouple cell division from the change in mechanics and maybe cell state as well. Would be interesting.
So experimentally, can you manipulate anything that corresponds to changing this noise temperature in the model?
Yeah, so the only thing we've done is we've made little clones of mice and mutant cells, and we can show that they get lots of neighbor exchange, but it's quite hard to, the numbers are low, so we haven't been able to measure. So then that cell would have if you have two cells, interface with very, very low myosin. And then the other junctions would have myosin on one side and on the other side. So you might be expected to get a...
That's changing the myosin level. Is there anything you can...
Oh, to change just the...
Just the, like, the attempt rate for keywords. It's all... can be done.
I mean, I think we can do things where... for example, later on in the tissue, the Bristol cells grow. Because you get a force, because they're growing, you get name exchange on the boundaries, which is driven probably by growth. So there might be ways where we can do perturbations where you drive name exchange by pushing, or maybe you do a wound and you see wound closure and you drive it by pulling. So you might be able to, in a way, distinguish. That might be interesting to see whether we can see a signature that's different in a driven T1 versus these, which we're saying are essentially just to do with intrinsic fluctuations. So I think that would be quite nice to try and see, look for a signature that's different to a driven one, maybe. Yeah.
I probably had the same idea as Max. So you say if you have few clones of a different type, if you have both of them together in a tissue, you might expect differences.
At the boundaries, I think that's
at the boundaries, or between one and the other. Yeah.
I think that'd be worth doing. And actually, cell composition, that's been proposed in a way that cell composition works a bit like that.
Yeah.
And you get preferential loss of junction. So we should look at that, actually.
No, mate, it's going in a different direction.
Yeah.
Of applying, so if this is a sort of passively rearranging the beam, it's got lots around it, it's pretty much what you say. And your imaging setup is there. Can you come up with a way of applying just a slight tension across the field of cells? See if they can also then passively rearrange to accommodate.
Right, if that's different. It's quite. We have tried to stretch the motion quite a bit, actually. Wounding, what you can do with wounding is then a wound closes and afterwards you get that sort of tension in the tissue.
So you probably get a lot of rearrangements within the cells of the proteins.
Yeah.
So just like a very minor.
Yeah. Well, what we have done is we have a system with Guillaume Charras and London. Cool system where you take an epithelium and you stretch it, an MCK epithelium, and you can do it with and without them. In fact, interestingly, if you put MCK cells on a substrate where they can walk, you get lots of name exchange. You remove the substrate, you pull the tissue, there's no name exchange. If you reduce myosin, you start to get some name exchange. So in that case, we've got a force which you're applying, and myosin again resists name exchange. So that's one thing we've been able to do. But in a different system. But it looks similar in some sense. Maybe everybody